somebody. Help! Not just anybody. Help! You know I need someone. Help!
Hello and welcome to another soon-to-be award-winning episode of Real Recovery. So glad you joined us tonight. And happy Father's Day. So glad you're a dad, and we celebrate you today. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio, and across the way, George Fraser, whose father once told him with confidence that there was no shame in repeating the ninth grade three times.
Yeah, Dad was always there for me.
I know he was.
Three times.
No shame in that, George.
Thank you, Bill.
Yeah. George, we have a great show tonight. We have Todd Mullican in studio, and we all often go to Todd. He's like having, you know, that closer in the bullpen that you pull out to get some big answers to some tough questions. And tonight we're going to talk about the role that Dad has in the family, and we want to celebrate Dad tonight and say, Dad's, we think you're doing a great job. However, a lot of people that listen to the show are so inclined to do so because they have addiction issues in their family, and that addiction issue might involve Dad. And when Dad becomes an addict, an alcoholic, or a gambler, or something that is destructive to the family system, that causes a lot of pain. And we're going to talk about that tonight a little bit.
I think that's great. And Todd's one of our favorite guests. He's younger than I am, but I've kind of come to look at him as a second dad, Bill, with all the good guidance we get from him and the fun banter that we have. It's rare to have a gift of somebody that can communicate Christ and his healing power, but have a good time with it and be very respectful and kind, and he brings all of that. Mm. And tonight we're going to talk about step two, which is came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And on our show, the power greater than ourselves is not a higher power, it's the high power. That's Jesus Christ.
Excellent.
That's what we're going to talk about.
Good. Now, before we get to all of that, George, I suggest we first of all say hello to Elena.
Hey, guys.
And say, and Dan's in the phone room, and Dan's got cobwebs on his head because there's never a phone up to his ear, and that would break the cobwebs. If you do want to call, if you've got an issue about your dad, who maybe have been...
I do. What's the number? Got a couple.
George, you can't call into the show. You're on the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. See, now you've got me all mad already.
What's the number?
It is 1-877-933-2484. And that's,
could you say it faster so nobody can write it down?
Yeah, 1-877-933-2484. You know, the family members play roles in the family when Dad's an alcoholic, and that becomes difficult. There are roles like the mascot, the kid who uses comedy when facing difficult and uncomfortable situations.
Even as an adult.
Even as an adult. And then there's the person who tries to be the hero, and they try to do everything, and they become over-responsible. And that creates problems as well, because the system is the system is meant to function a certain way. And when it gets off kilter, there's problems. But we're going to celebrate dads tonight. We just want to honor dads. And actually, I asked Elena, do you have a favorite dad story you could share real quick on the air?
I do. Yeah, I have a favorite. I'm not sure that he would want to relive this memory necessarily. But when I was younger, I was really into dance. And so I had all these dance classes. And one year, our dance teacher decided for Father's Day, because our recital is usually in June, to have a father-daughter dance if the dads wanted to take a class with the daughter and learn a dance routine. And so, of course, I begged and begged and begged my dad to do it, and he gracefully agreed to do it, although his dancing was not as graceful as his agreement to do it. But it was really fun. So he had four performances of live dancing with me on stage with a few other dads and stuff, and it was really fun.
Oh, so, is that ever sweet?
Yeah.
That's really sweet. Thanks for sharing that story.
Yeah.
How about you, Dan? Well, we're not interested in Dan. Anyway, he doesn't have a microphone back there, so, you know, we're going to have to pass.
There's a reason he does.
I know. George, now, your dad was a very key player in your life, very important.
Oh, my dad was great. I miss him.
Yeah, and he was your best friend, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
The best thing my dad ever did for me, and I've talked about it before on the show, and I'll condense this, but I was in treatment for the third time. Family week, and we go to where we're going to make amends. And I said, you know, I'm really sorry about all that. And my dad looked at me and he said, George, a real man, big dig there, if he's truly sorry about what he does, he doesn't do it anymore.
Ouch.
And that changed my life right there.
Mm-hmm.
After I decided not to harm him. Of course, he was 6'2", 215. And,
mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I miss my dad.
He would have been a small stain on the sofa.
I miss my dad a lot. Yeah. And I look forward to seeing him again, you know. It's been 13 years. Nobody yells at me anymore.
Don't get weepy on me in the
studio,
George.
No, I won't.
I can't deal with that tonight.
Yeah. How about you? Dad memories?
Well, would you say dad memories?
Yeah.
Well, my dad died when I was 8 months old.
Right.
So I don't I don't have any recollection, you know.
Okay.
So, yeah. But then my stepdad died when I was 17. So, you know, there was a little bit of sadness issues related to that.
And he was a pretty cool guy.
He was a very cool guy. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So, George, we'll resume this a little bit later in the show, if time permitting.
Yeah, usually we can't talk about ourselves enough, but tonight we're...
I know, not tonight. Let's talk a little bit about step two. Let's flesh that out a little bit more, and we can give set the table for Todd, because Todd's going to bring all that wisdom.
He's got to tie all this together, and he's gifted enough to do that. What happens in step two is we come into recovery, we come into belief, you know, we show up, and then we wind up coming to believe that maybe this God thing is true, and maybe I don't have all the answers. I think sanity is believing the truth and acting upon it, and conversely, insanity is believing a lie is the truth and acting on that. Let's say, you know, I've been sober a couple of years. I think I can have one or two drinks. That's a lie, and then I act on it. Or I deserve this. I know God has his plan, but mine's a little better. Anytime we go into that, Bill, that's insanity. And I always wander from the God that I love because one of my defaults, and I think for a lot of us, is I've got a better way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really idolatry, and we talk all the time that addiction and sin is idolatry. And if you're in recovery, you haven't drank or had a drug in a long time, great. But if you don't have Jesus, you're still in idolatry because you're calling the shots. And that's what we want to get to. That is sanity. There is a God, it's not me, and I'm going to let him run my life.
So when it comes to accountability, if you are having this moment, like you just talked about, George, where you have a little run of sobriety and then you say, I think I can have a drink and be okay,
sure,
which is you describe as insanity. See, I listen. Okay.
Yep.
What about the accountability factor where you actually have that conversation with someone else who might be in recovery or someone that's a mentor or someone that you're in community with? If you said those words to that person, they would look at you like you were crazy, right?
Absolutely. And that's why you need to go to God and to have a community. The committee in my head is very active. The monkey's off my back, but the circus is still in town. And the voices I get in my head of what is a good idea, I don't trust. My best thinking got me here, and we need to have people go, you talked about that. We talked last week. I said I had been talking to my mentor, Danny, and he said, George, you can pay me now or pay me later. We had this conversation 6 months ago. You haven't made a lot of progress on it.
Mm-hmm.
And what we need to do is have somebody go, you know, Bill, I love you enough to tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear, and you're going down the wrong road. And if you don't have that, you're going to poll enough people till you find somebody who agrees with you, and then you're going to, that gives you the green light. And that gets us in trouble. We need godly wisdom in our life. And that's one of the things tonight, what our guest brings is godly wisdom and the ability to say, you're going the wrong track.
Mm-hmm. So when you're having that conversation that says, I think I can handle one or two, you're having that as a private conversation in your head. And then you're giving yourself permission to go have one or two, which is a recipe for a relapse.
Right. You're lying to yourself.
Right.
I want to make sure I always tell myself the truth. And I don't always do that. Could I handle a drink after 30 years? You know, logically that would make sense, but I know what would happen. Do I think about it sometimes? Oh, gosh, I do, sure.
Mm-hmm.
But we only think about the good times and not the bad times. So the truth is they're both part of the same event, and I think we compartmentalize in our memory highlight reel just the euphoric recall and not the pain, the sorrow, and the remorse that gets us in here. And that's the truth. And I remember as a kid that show Dragnet with Joe Friday, just the facts, man.
Mm-hmm.
I want to tell nothing but the truth, but the whole truth. Don't leave it out.
Mm-hmm.
Would there be some good times if we went out after the show and had some cocktails? Absolutely. But there'd be heartbreak, possibly death, you know, and great depression, and it's not God's will. Let's throw those things in, too.
Yeah, that raises the stakes considerably, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
And it's not doing what I want to do. What does God want me to do? And a very simple thing to throw out for step two is this going to help my walk with God or hurt it? Is this going to help my recovery or hurt it? And I have a real hard time, even George, the marketing guy, of putting a spin on not going to church, not going to a meeting, and having a drink are going to be God's will and make my recovery better. I can't do that.
Mm-hmm. I think doing the right thing is always a difficult thing to do. It's never easy. I remember a pastor saying once that it's better things be hard and right than hard and wrong, because they're both going to be hard. And you're much better off choosing hard and right. And I think, George, you've been doing that so well for 30-plus years that
hopefully you've found another church. It's kind of rigid.
No, I think it's really wise.
No, I do too. Don't you want the easy way out?
Of course.
Okay, and that's the insanity, isn't it?
It's total insanity.
I mean,
people who have been in addiction have been so used to lying that when you talk about being truthful with themselves, I don't know if they can do that. I think they don't know what a straight line looks like because they've lived with a crooked line for most of their life.
Oh, gosh. I'm a great liar.
So when you talk about...
That actually was a truthful statement.
I know, but when you talk about having to tell the truth, George, you know, how do you know you're telling the truth to yourself?
I don't.
That's what I mean. That's why you have to get in accountability with God's word, because God's word is that plumb line, is that straight edge that says, I come up against this.
Yes, and that's what you do. I like what your pastor said, Bill, that delayed gratification thing is a sign of maturity.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we look at people that get sober and stay sober and keep walking the walk, that delayed return on their investment is key. We work with guys. We were down Friday at Salvation Army. We're talking with one guy. He's got what he needs 3 months into a six-month program. He wants to leave. And what you talked to him about was that. Do I finish what I start? Do I press on toward the goal? That's what we got to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, George, I think we're going to take a little break, and we're so interesting tonight that when we come back, we may or may not bring Todd on. It all depends.
I think he's on.
Do you think he's on?
Oh, I think we should have brought him on about 5 minutes ago.
We'll find out in a minute.
Okay.
So there's the cliffhanger. You're listening to Real Recovery. Thanks for being with us tonight. Bill, George, Elena, even Dan's in the phone room looking very bored tonight. Please call. Please call. Welcome back to Real Recovery. I'm so glad you're with us tonight. It's a beautiful Sunday evening, and happy Father's Day. We're going to never get tired of saying that. If you're listening tonight, you just joined us. We have Todd Mullican in the studio tonight. We have not brought him on yet. We're just about to. He is owner of Mullican Counseling in Edina, and he brings all kinds of wisdom and structure and sanity to our show, George. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio, and across over the way is George Fraser, who definitely has a natural talent for going to bed early.
I do. You can see it tonight.
Oh, I
can
see
it. Right in front of your eyes.
Right in front of my eyes. But a recurring guest to our show, Todd Mullican, welcome back.
Thanks, Bill. Great to be here.
All right,
here.
We're going to talk about a sensitive issue tonight, and this is the dad, and we want to honor dad, and we want to say, Dad, you're so important, and we can hardly stand it. But also, dad wields a lot of influence, especially if dad's off the rails a little bit, and if he finds himself dealing with stress in a way that invites addiction into the family structure.
Mm. Yeah, and you think about the dad who's married, and the woman's number one need is for security. And so when you bring in one of the three A's that's destructive, adultery, addiction, abuse, it creates so much insecurity in the home, if that makes sense. And there's so much trauma, so then all of the family members are scrambling, as you mentioned earlier, for roles. Typically, the spouse goes into that enabling role, minimizing, it's not that big a deal, it's not too bad.
Mm.
And one of the kids becomes the hero, one becomes the scapegoat, especially the one that's rebelling against the father that's in that addiction or abuse or adultery pattern.
And the kids are scared.
They are.
They're
because
scared.
It's not a safe place.
No, it's not. And you're on eggshells all the time, and you never know what you're getting at night when dad comes home.
Right. So trauma always makes us compensate and do something a lot different than we naturally would. And that's why you see the extremes that come out of those alcoholic homes.
I would say, George, that 99.9% of the stories we get of people recovering from addictions through Christ have started off with trauma in their family as a result of one or two parents using substances themselves.
That's true. That does line up. I wonder if we could back up a little bit. And you talked about the extremes, so I'm very interested in that. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. I mean, you think of the roles that come out of that family system, because in this case we're talking about dads tonight. I'm a dad. I have three young adult daughters, so it's a joy and a gift and a blessing to be a dad. And so when we struggle with an addiction, it's just creating lots of insecurity. So in the natural course of life, God has made us to celebrate his life, his plan for us, his story, and how we can honor and glorify him. But when we're scared and afraid, we compensate for that either to try to get dad's approval, so we become a perfectionist. Maybe dad will love me. Maybe. So we try to do things perfectly. We rebel, against that because we're so angry at who dad is. Usually the firstborn does that in my experience, especially if it's a son. And he's so angry and he becomes a scapegoat. It's really the firstborn's issues, but now it's really dad's addiction that's causing it. So you're going to have extremes that come from that. Either the codependent enabler who's just trying to live in the fact that maybe it'll be okay. Maybe tomorrow he'll stop drinking. Maybe tomorrow he'll stop using crack. You know, just they minimize, they have to do that to cope, to survive. So people get into one of those roles just to survive, if that makes sense. So that's why, and we'll get to this in a little bit, that's why that step two is so powerful. Because the addict naturally is narcissistic. Because he or she is, you know, grandiose and lack empathy. So once they, you know, can really turn their power over to Jesus, and it isn't necessarily a one-time thing. Sure, sometimes it's Saul to Paul. A lot of times it's an ongoing, every day bringing the Holy Spirit in. And but once that happens, I've seen so many families that change beautifully. And so that's one of my encouragements tonight for dads that are still in that pattern. It's never too late to change. I've seen dads at 75 change, and their 45-year-old kids are in my office a few weeks later, not trusting it, not believing it, but it's changing their pattern forever.
Okay, so for a dad who's listening tonight and really doesn't think he might have a problem, maybe a better mirror to look at for him would be the behavior of his kids.
That's so well said, George. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, again, one of the questions I ask my girls, you know, I don't know, when I can, once a year, or, you know, when I can, is how am I doing as your dad? What do you see? One of the things I try to ask my wife, how am I doing as your hubby? What do you see? And again, it isn't ongoing, but it's there. It's on the table. So it's one of the things we can do to, you know, it's not the main place of accountability. Our main place of accountability is with Jesus as well as an accountability person outside the family. But when we ask those questions, we become vulnerable. And we need to have ears to hear and eyes to see.
Boy, I really like that, Bill.
I do, too.
I think for the dad who's an addict or alcoholic or both, to reflect that I'm not doing any damage. I work hard. I've provided a good home. And then maybe the kids get into junior high, and the son, who was a great athlete, all of a sudden is turned into a great little criminal and getting in trouble at school. That's what you would see, isn't it?
You would. You'd see that, or you'd see the perfectionism. And that's why mostly what happens, at least the people I see, is they say it's not worth talking to dad. In this case, we're talking about dads tonight that are addicts. It's just not worth talking to him. Because if I say that, he'll get so angry. Well, you know, he might hit me. He certainly won't listen to me. If I say that, it might cause him to drink. You know what I mean? So they have their own kind of processing of what I call outside-in codependent life. And so when the dad can set the table from just an ounce of mercy, just even 30 seconds of empathy, it can create a little bit of a system change. And then, of course, for us as believers, we can see maybe a generational shift from how dad grew up, because that's
sure.
Usually what he, to a shift in how he is becoming as a dad, and it changes lives forever.
So our kids might look at this, that their behavior is causing dad's behavior?
Right.
Oh,
and they'll take it as a blame, it's my fault. And so that's why the perfectionist is looking for that approval. And then they will do amazing things in this world. You know, they will go to heights that most people won't because they're driven by fear. They're driven by that lack of approval. It's not good enough. It's not good enough. It's not good enough. So it's done out of fear versus truth and hope and love. But you see that just to get that approval from dad. And that's what makes – that's why it's so powerful when a father, whether they've been – you know, an addict for 20 years or 20 weeks or 20 days, when they can get to step one or step two and really start having conversations with the family, at some level, it just creates change that will last forever.
Okay, so the one kid is going to be a perfectionist and is going to save the family through being the Eagle Scout and the athlete and the honor roll.
Yep.
The other response is to be very defiant.
Talk to the hand. Absolutely. You're actually, because one of the books I wrote is All the Best for Parents, Five Ways to Bring Out the Best for Kids. And I interviewed kids from 10 to 20 for 7 years and asked them, what do your parents need to do to bring out your best? And the first thing they said is just live their life the way they want us to live. So,
wow.
You know, that's all, because when a parent says, you know, go make your bed when their bed's a hurricane, or when the parent says, stop yelling, you know, and they're the one that's yelling, it's hard for the kid to respect that. So when the dad is drinking excessively or hitting mom or cheating on mom or doing one of the big three A's, adultery, addiction, or abuse, you know, that kid, especially who's closest to the fire, a firstborn boy especially, is going, are you kidding me? What you say, I don't have any respect for. So that's the rebellious kid, the kid that does exactly what dad doesn't want him to do.
Okay, so we would look at that, I would as an outsider, and go, gosh, that one kid's doing great. But in reality, the kid that's really doing bad might be healthier psychologically. Is that
right.
Fair?
It's fair. It depends how far he goes with it, of course, and what kind of system he gets in and what's the truth about his mentoring and how oppositional is his behavior getting. And
okay.
Is he developing a relationship with God? Or, you know, because sometimes those people get, you know, really in trouble. But, yeah, at least they're being honest. So that's the beautiful part about the boundaries tonight for all the people listening that are exposed to an addict, is just to be honest. For the first time in their life, just be honest about what you're feeling.
Pretty heavy-duty stuff, Bill.
It is. Todd, I have a question about the intimacy that men attempt to have with their children, and that might not be a skill they have any ability with. It might be a very awkward thing that they, you know, their dads didn't share intimacy, they don't know how to do it, and now they've been using, maybe they've been drinking for a decade or two, and now they're trying to remove themselves from their addiction, yet they have no intimacy skills.
Right.
And like you said, the kids don't trust it, and now dad has gotten a little bit weirder because he's not drinking, but we still can't talk to him. Are there any skills for dads, things that dads can do to make baby steps towards better communication with their kids?
So, no easy.
Man, that's a good question.
That's...
I just realized
there's
that was
no...
like phenomenal.
It was
unbelievable. I thought so, too.
It's brilliant.
I thought so, too.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, thank you.
No easy answer to that other than practicing empathy. Empathy is putting yourself in the other person's shoes. So sometimes it's a simple... maybe I've told you that. Did I tell you about the garage door guy?
No.
A couple times ago?
No.
Well, guy was fixing my garage door, and I made a mistake of telling him what I did for a living, which wasn't a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
So he asked me, you know, I got something for you. I said, well, what's up? He said, well, I've been sober for 15 years. I said, oh, my goodness. Congratulations. He said, but I have an issue with my kids. I said, what's going on? He said, well, I haven't talked to them for a while. I said, well, how many kids do you have? He says, I have three.
Mm.
And he told me their ages. They were in their late teens, early 20s. I said, well, how long has it been since you talked to them? He said, about 15 years. And I said, well, what's going on? He said, well, they have my number, but they never call.
Hmm.
So he said, what should I do? I said, well, before you brush your teeth tonight, call each of them and just say, hi, I'm here, I love you, I'm sorry, can we start a conversation? Okay. And two of the three will probably hang up on him and say, and not believe it or trust it. One might, especially the people pleaser, one might open the door a little bit. But it starts with that. It just starts with an honest, vulnerable conversation. I love you. I care about you. I'm so sorry. I really don't even know what to say. Does that make sense? So it isn't like you want to come up with canned speeches. You just want to be honest enough. And don't worry about doing it right. Just look at the motive you have within you. And that's what James talks about so much in James 4, where, you know, what's the motive within you there? And if it's pure and godly and vulnerable, then that's good enough. So the practice tools that I work with guys on in those situations is just create a safe place and say, I'm here, I love you, I'm so sorry, you know, I care about you.
Mm-hmm. I'm mostly impressed that you have a garage.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a scary garage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was fixing the garage door, not cleaning out the garage.
Oh, okay. So it is
another
scary.
Story. Good at that stuff.
Well, George, it's a hard road for a lot of men who have no history or experience being intimate with their kids. And then they add addiction in and they take addiction out and they're still where they are struggling.
Well, and their model, too, from their father. You know, I remember growing up, I loved my dad. He was a great guy, but it was all about my dad in that generation, you know, in the 60s and the 70s. And I was scared of my dad. And so, yeah, there was a big boundary there about and you had to man up. You know, I remember stuff like Boys Don't Cry and... And I remember when he found out I was playing with G.I. Joe, oh, my gosh, oh, we won't go down that road. But, that, you know, we weren't supposed to do that. I thought it was an Army thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was okay.
But he wasn't trying to be your pal, was he? He was your dad, right?
Right.
Yeah. And I think that generations was good at that.
Well, that's the nice part about having a mentor or being in the program, don't you think? You are learning at least a little bit about how to have a conversation, how to articulate a little bit about what you're feeling and thinking. And there's practice in that. There's rehearsal in that. It's coming from a place of openness and genuineness.
Sure.
And trust me with this, the kids will see that, whether they're 10 or 40, Bill. They'll see.
Mm-hmm.
They'll see, and that's what they're looking for. They'll see, is there genuineness here or not?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's really about.
Maybe you're a dad and you've changed. Maybe you were in addiction and now you're out of it. And you have a solid story of what happened and you'd be willing to share it on the air tonight. We'd love to hear it. Give us a call at 1-877-933-2484. 100th caller will get a free puppy tonight, so we're looking forward to that. You're listening to Real Recovery. Bill Arnold, George Fraser, Elena on the board. You're listening to Todd Mullican tonight in studio. We'll be back in just a minute. Turn on my mic. There we go. We're back. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Bill, George, you've done a nice job of changing your appearance and you're blending in nicely.
Thank you, Bill.
Yep. And Daniel just informed us we're out of puppies.
So
that offer's off the table.
You were right. It got a lot of people.
I know. The phone's lit up.
Good for you.
Yeah. We're talking tonight to Todd Mullican. He's owner of Mullican and Company. I don't know if I say that right, Todd. Mullican Counseling.
The Mullican Group.
The Mullican Group. Oh, Mullican Team. The Mullican. Yes. Any Dinah. Anyway, we have all that up on the My Faith Radio page. You can just go look at it there on our website. Okay. Todd, we want to talk about skills for dads. What are some things dads can do? Because we want to be very positive tonight about dads.
Absolutely. So,
and set the record straight. It's Mullican
Counseling Center.
Mullican Counseling Center.
Boy, that's tough to remember.
It's kind of tough to remember.
Yeah. Because he's a counselor and it's a center. And his name's Mullican.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Good thing there's a distance right now.
Keeping things simple here.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to do. So the book is All the Best for Parents, 5 Ways to Bring Out the Best in Your Kids. And there were 5 themes that I heard that would be best for the fathers to be working on.
Well, let's hear them.
First one is, and they all have to begin with the same letter, of course, you know, when you write a book, the editor says that stuff.
Okay.
So the first is being congruent. And, of course, the 12-year-olds weren't saying that to me. But the idea there is the parent living out how they want their child to live? Because kids don't listen to us, but they'll eventually imitate us.
So the words have to match the actions and vice versa.
Right. So a lot of parents will come in and say, why don't my kids respect me? And I said, well, why would they want to if you're coming off so interrogative and so, you know, always shaming?
Todd, you know that wonderful line, what you're doing speaks so loudly, I can't hear what you're saying?
Yeah, love that.
Yeah. Anyway, it pretty much summarizes it.
Yeah, so the truth is how I am is how my kids are going to become. I have a 25, 24, and 22-year-old daughters, and they're a mix of me and my wife, and thank goodness they look like my wife, so. That's good, but it's all about that. It's about, that's the good news about being a parent, especially as a dad. The good news is just start living your life the way you'd like your kids to become, and it's never too late to start. So don't ask them to do something that you don't do. Does that make sense? So don't, you know, if you have young kids and their bed isn't made, don't have them make their bed unless your bed's made. You know, live your life the way you want your kids to live. So if you're an addict or even in recovery, you know, are you living authentically? Because the kids will see that. The kids will see the grace upon grace and all those good things. Second C is to be consistent, and that is, I think, you know, as we learn in 1 John 1:14-17, Jesus came full of 2 things, full of truth and grace.
Hmm.
And so I've noticed in personality styles, usually you have more of one or more of the other. And so the dads that are more the truth tellers can sometimes lean into being too controlling, having to get the last word in, not giving their kid a voice or at least a chance to have a dialogue. So they have to work on being more consistent by bringing more grace into it, by giving their kids a chance to share their feelings, by being vulnerable enough to say, here's how I see it, my 20-year-old son, how do you see it? You know, having a dialogue versus I'm right and you're, you know, shut up and listen kind of thing. Or maybe you're an addict that is more of that codependent people pleaser that started drinking or using from a place of anxiety and fear, and you're coping just to get away from the way they think. And now that you're free from that and you love Jesus and you're feeling, you know, set free, but you're still having almost too much grace, if you will, and not sharing enough truth.
Mm.
Be more consistent by having the tough call. Maybe the truth is your 17-year-old is starting to use in the same way you did, you know, years and years ago, and they have the same addictive physiology and generational patterns continuing. You got to use the tough love stuff you were talking about earlier, George. You know,
okay.
You got to speak truth. So I think in being consistent as a father, how are you doing being full of truth and full of grace? Of course, you know, we're not going to measure up to our Lord, but pursuing that.
Okay, Todd, I got to jump in here for a second because I'm stuck on congruent a little bit. And if you are, how do you function as an adult? Let's say you want to have a barbecue in your backyard and all of these friends are coming over and you've got a bunch of beer, or you're having a nice dinner party and there's a bunch of wine flowing, and it all seems like things adults can do, but you're still exposing your kids to that environment. So do you say there's going to be no alcohol in the house, which would be my vote, but how do people make sense of all that?
Yeah, you know, I, at risk of sounding wishy-washy, I think it's going to be less about whether there's alcohol there. It's going to be more about how am I living. You know, I mean, our kids, my wife and I don't drink,
but both heroin addicts, right?
Right. But, you know, our daughters will, you know, that are of age, they'll have a beer occasionally. And you know, so I think there's going to be, I think it depends on the family system. But if you're in recovery, you're modeling recovery by, being abstinent and, you know, being sober.
Yeah.
But I think you don't want to, in my opinion, you don't want to force that on your kids. You want to live that out. If you force that on them in a way that's rigid and controlling, and, here's how I recovered, and you guys better not even get close to this stuff. You know what I mean? It's kind of like the parent that grew up and had a bad experience in public school.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't want any of their kids to go to public school. Well, calm down.
You're right.
You know, calm down. Or they had a bad experience in private school. Well, you know. So if you had a bad experience, if you're an addict, you know, we've had tough experiences. So I hope that answers your question.
It does. It does for sure. All right. So being congruent and then being consistent. And what would be number three?
Three is about being compassionate. And so how am I doing, especially most of the addicts I've worked with, and forgive me if I'm putting them in a little bit of a box, tend to be on the side of more controlling, more narcissistic, more dominating in their style. So the way they show compassion, I think, is when their 25-year-old thinks he or she is all that, how do you have a conversation versus I'm the parent, shut up and listen still? How am I doing with giving my kids a chance to know their feelings, share what's on their mind versus always having to be right, always having to win, always having to get the last word in? So showing compassion means, you know, I recognize God's God and I'm not, and I want to have a safe dialogue with my kids. How am I doing? And if I'm coming from a place of contentment like Paul talks about, in Philippians 4, then I need to be able to provide that environment where I can show compassion to them. On the other side, if you're more of that people pleaser dad that's always trying to be a buddy to the kids, showing compassion is sometimes making the tough call, right? It's about using that tough love when you need to be. So showing so for me, usually we're harder on our own gender as a parent. So all you fathers out there that have sons, you're probably harder on them than you are with your daughters. If you're like me, I have all daughters. It was really easy. You know, if I had all sons, I'd have been really hard on them. You know, we're hard on our own gender. So the way I needed to show compassion to my girls is follow through with discipline when I needed to. You know, and that didn't have to do that very often. They're great kids, but when I needed to do that. And I had a hard time with that because I'm more of a people pleaser style. So being compassionate means different things. Our Lord was full of compassion, but look how he was compassionate with the woman at the well versus showing compassion to the Pharisees.
That ties in with what I wanted to ask you next. Do we identify God with our Father?
I think we do. I think most people that I've worked with do. And so, again, there's lots of stuff there. So if I'm the dad, again, if I struggle with addiction, I'm in recovery, I've found Christ, or I was a believer before, got in recovery, or was an addict, fell away, I'm back, and one of my kids is having a hard time even thinking of entering the church or thinking about loving God or having a relationship with God, whereas a strong atheist, I need to give that time and space and understanding.
Yeah, if I have an abusive father, my tendency is going to be that God's abusive, huh?
Right, totally. And so it's going to shape their view. And so the best thing I can do as a dad with those little bits of empathy is starting today with creating a place that's secure, creating a place where kids have a voice, whether the kid is 4 or 40, and starting that and, you know, pursuing them as God pursues us. Every day, like that garage door guy, that's the last thing I said to him, just to pursue your kids every day. You know, don't wait for the phone to ring. Pursue them. God pursues us. Pursue them.
It's a big word. It's a big word and an important word, isn't it? Pursue.
It is. Because a lot of folks our age in our 50s and 60s. Oh, sorry, Bill.
That's all right.
Last time on the show.
Go ahead.
So we tend to say, why don't my kids call me? And I have a lot of grandparents in my office. Why don't my kids call us? Well, call them up. You know, they're busy. Call them up. It's okay. God's knocking on your door, knock on their door.
I like it.
Yeah, there's going to come a day when, on the kid's side, you're going to wish your dad would call, but he can't anymore, and you can't call him. So.
Right. So when you get that call, it feels good.
Yeah, treasure it.
He's thinking about you. Yeah. That's the great part about being a dad is you can pursue your kids. I mean, you pursue your kids with contentment and grace and truth. It's beautiful. Even if you've been an addict for a long time.
Well, you miss the dad stuff, right? You know, like nobody else has ever said to me, because I said so, that's why. You know?
Right.
I miss that. Although a cop did say that to me one time. I'll take that back.
Well, good
time to go to a commercial, huh, Bill?
No, not yet. I'm going to keep hanging you out to dry there.
The two things I said to my girls every night when I tucked them in, I said, Jesus loves you and don't marry a schmuck. You know? And that worked. So two of them are married, and they both have chosen great guys.
Nice.
So I'm grateful.
Nice.
But again, those words from a father, you know, are powerful because it brings, when it's loving and healthy, tough love, compassionate love, all those C's we talked about so far, it, you know, it creates security in that home, which is the kids and the woman's number one need.
Well, I think there's a huge correlation with the guys we work with, Bill, and identifying their dads and God, in that a lot of our guys don't know their dads and they don't know God. And that's not a coincidence to me.
Agreed.
Yeah. I agree too.
Yep.
All right. So, Todd, are there four C's or five C's?
There's five.
We've done three of them.
We've done three, and I think we're going to go to break, and then when we come back, the big cliffhanger is the two remaining C's. These are skills for dads that are going to help you with your relationship with your kids.
Cash, one of them.
That's what?
Cash is not one of them, George. Anyway.
Didn't make the top five.
You're listening to Real Recovery. We're so glad you joined us tonight. I hope you're having a great Father's Day. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Real Recovery. I hope you're enjoying tonight's show. I know I am, and George, I think you are too.
Learning a lot.
Learning a lot. We're talking to Todd Mullican. He's the owner of Mullican Counseling Center.
In Edina.
In Edina. Thank you so much. I said that very well. And that'll all be on our webpage if you want to check it out. And we're talking about the skill sets that he is suggesting dads have going forward as they're recovering or just trying to improve their relationship with their kids. And he talked about five C's. One of them was being congruent, being consistent with how you do things, consistency being number two, and compassionate number three. And we've got the big cliffhanger coming up, George, with four and number five. And maybe there'll be a six bonus round. Who knows? Todd, take it away with number four.
Number four is being a parent that's creative.
Oh, wouldn't have had that one there, Bill.
I wouldn't have guessed that one either.
So let's say that...
Because we're not creative. We wouldn't have gotten it, huh?
So are we outside of ourselves enough... Since Jesus is on the throne, are we outside of ourselves enough to know the uniqueness of each of our kids and how they're wired? Or am I trying to make them into me? So I recognize, you know, one of my kids is more introverted. I'm a strong extrovert. Well, it doesn't mean he or she's depressed and has many issues. It means they're quiet, introspective. They'll have two great friends. They'll read. They'll do amazing things. They'll be deep in thought. They won't respond right away. How am I creative enough in knowing who I am in Christ to know that there's room for kids to be different? And how am I steering them to their places of strength and confidence And they're their lanes, I call it, their lanes of values and strengths. So if we're a creative parent, we'll get outside of ourselves enough to know how God has made each of them uniquely in his image. And it may be very different than who you and I are as a father.
Is that a comfort zone thing, Todd?
I think so. I'm trying to figure out.
I don't like the word comfort zone very much, but I think it applies. You know, Elena was telling a story early on about her dad willing to take some dance lessons and dance with her. To me, that's way out of the comfort zone.
And that's
him being creative and coming up alongside his kid and saying, this is what interests you, and therefore it interests me.
Right. I'm sure when you started dance, Elena, you wasn't saying, I can't wait to do Daughters with Dance, you know, in 15 years or whatever, right?
No, yeah. I was not thinking that.
That wasn't on the top five.
No.
All my daughters were in dance for all those years, too, and they took a tap and ballet and stuff. Somehow I got out of the father and daughter dance thing.
You're lucky.
Man, I was fortunate. So, but the creative parent's so cool. Like, sometimes I'll have an extroverted dad or mom bring in. They'll have three kids. Two are extroverted, one's introverted, and they'll think there's something wrong with the kid that's different than them. I hope that makes sense. Versus, oh, no, God's made them uniquely this way. Or the vice versa. You can have a very introverted parent who's very quiet, respectful, internal, deep, quiet relationships with the Lord. And they have an extroverted kid that's bouncing off the walls, is busy, and has 400 friends and doing 23 things on a weekend. There's nothing wrong with that child. They're just different in who you and I are. So are we creative enough as a parent to know the uniqueness of each of our kids?
Love it. All right, number five.
I think the most important one. Are we a parent that confesses when we're wrong? Most of the time, most of the couples I've seen the last 30 years in counseling, when one of the two doesn't say they're sorry in a conflict and never does, it's usually because they never heard their most dominant parent say they were sorry. And I know my wife and I were a part of a youth ministry team, and we had a group of pastors come to the church and talk about their story and everything else. I don't know, did I talk about this here? I can't remember if I mentioned this on another show.
Yeah, you're probably some other show.
Another show, sorry.
You're right.
You do anyway. Other shows.
Yeah, this is good. This is good information, George.
Well, enjoy the time you have left.
Here we go.
Just start playing music, Elena. Let's just get this over with.
So good. Boy, a lot of mercy here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, tons of it. So, anyway.
It's that compassion. Well, number three.
We have the truth down.
And we're creative, so yeah.
I look forward to coming back. So I totally forgot where I was.
Confession.
Yeah.
Confession.
So we had this youth group together, and we had these pastors come, and they talked about their lives, talked about their theology. And we were at a church that was, you know, Bible-believing, but probably a little bit less conservative than we were. We were more conservative. And so afterwards, my wife and I and two other leaders split up the kids into groups and say, hey, which pastor did you like the most or what you think? And we were powerfully amazed, at least my wife and I were on our drive home, that most of the kids in both of our groups liked the one that was more conservative than most of their theologies. But it was because he cut open a vein and said, you know, as a dad, you know, my kids are in their teens and I'm learning how to say I'm sorry for the very first time. My dad never said he was sorry to me when he would scream at me or when he'd just overreact or underreact. And so there's so much power when the father confesses. But to George's point earlier in the show, or maybe it was off air, the idea that, you know, just saying you're sorry isn't enough. We have to make the change in behavior too. But what happens to the kids is you don't lose you don't lose authority when you say you're sorry. You actually gain the kids' respect. Whether the kid, again, is 5 or 50. So how are we doing being comfortable enough in our own skin in Jesus to be able to acknowledge that we were wrong there? We don't lose authority. We gain respect.
I remember something that happened when I was like 7, and my dad introduced me to a pretty famous person, and the guy gave my dad a hard time a little bit, you know, and my dad said afterwards, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that. And I remember thinking, oh, it just drew me to my dad.
Yeah.
You know, like, I felt really close to him with that. That's interesting. It's that kind of deal. I mean, rather than saying, you know what, I'm sorry about George. I'm sorry I have you as a kid, you know?
It's so true. Yeah, I mean, it drew you to him.
What do you mean that's true? That he was sorry? Yeah, but you do, and there's a... But how do you do that and not cross the generational boundary where I want my dad to be pretty competent?
Yeah. Well, again, Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Again, it's not. It isn't the parent that says, I'm sorry. You know, the kid that's just looking for approval, wanting to be the buddy. It's the parent that acknowledges when they've made a mistake.
Okay.
All right, George, we have a caller on the line. not to alarm you too much.
Well, I know it's not my dad.
I know it's not my dad. Welcome to the show. Hello?
Oh.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi, I'm Steve.
Hey, Steve.
I just wanted to make a comment about what Todd had said earlier in the beginning of the show. He kind of gave that family dynamics, and I'll run this past you, and then I'll just hang up and listen. But my dad was a World War II veteran, flew 32 missions over Germany as a bombardier in 45 and 44, 45. And he never drank a drop in his life. He was a smart guy. He's passed away in 92.
Mm-hmm.
But he never drank a drop till he got in the service. But once he started flying missions, you'd get done, and they'd give you a shot of booze. And he would trade his cigarettes for shots of booze, and that's when he started drinking. So growing up, he was a raging alcoholic. And about 10 years old, I started to resent it, like, big time. And the scenario he gave, Todd, was my household. I mean, my sister was the straight-A student achiever. I was the rebel. At 14 years old, I took all of his booze, dumped it down the drain, busted the bottles, crying while my sister's going, he's going to kill you, he's going to kill you.
Yeah.
And I just resented everything about him because he couldn't buy me a baseball glove.
Right.
But yet he could buy 5 cases of beer a month. And he was drunk all the time going through jobs. And anyway, I'm in recovery, you know, for the fifth time. In the last 38 years, I've been sober 25, but I'm on the right road again. And it was kind of funny, the amends, I mean, when he sobered up, and he died sober, and he sobered up about the time I just started getting going. When I was 17, I already had a problem on that. And I was 28 and had been in treatment for like the second time, and we went on a fishing trip because that's the one thing we had in common. And we didn't officially go, let's make amends, but we got to do that. And it was kind of like we're in the boat, and I said, well, remember the time you did this? And we'd laugh about it, and then he'd say, well, remember the time you did this? And we went on and on. But that scenario, I mean, was so. I mean, my sister was straight A's, and I was smashing up cars and getting DWIs and quitting the job before I got fired and the whole thing. But I really appreciate this show. I listen to it every week, and it's part of my program now. You know, so I'll say goodbye and just listen. Okay?
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Steve. You know, congratulations on your recovery and your hard work and your efforts, and thanks for sharing those thoughts about Dad. Fantastic.
That was nice. And it sounded like Dad left a little bit of a legacy of getting sober, that we see a hand of God in here that, you know, it's never lost, and we've never done it, and we can't repair it. And here's a guy years later taking the time to call us, and it's just a great story of what God did in both of their lives, and they got a chance to make amends and make things right. I like that a lot. Thanks for calling.
And he said it so well, too, about how he was just starting generational pattern at 17 while his dad was in recovery, and he's getting through it. He's working through it.
And I have a feeling the sister was trying to gain Dad's approval through perfection.
Of course.
By the straight-A students, and then he just did the opposite and did the rebellion. And, you know, Dad, who was a World War II hero,
right,
you know, was not showing heroic activity in the home.
No.
And denying a kid a baseball glove because it was too expensive, yet he could buy 5 cases of beer. Talk about a broken heart. Oh, my goodness. So
powerful stuff. It's so great to hear stories like that, though, because Steve's in recovery and growing and figuring it out. And praise God for that.
Yeah, and he sounds emboldened. He sounds like he's
absolutely
dug in, and he's going to work hard at recovery and do everything he can. And I just really honor that, Steve, and happy Father's Day if you're a dad. I want to throw that in there as well.
Yeah, very good. I like this story. We reflect back as we're talking about this, about our experiences as kids, and I've never been a dad, but, you know, the relationships, and I'm going back to the compassion. That's a key one, isn't it?
It is, because it helps you model, you know, Jesus in the home.
Yeah.
You know, and you brought up a great point about their image of God And so, you know, I just want to give that encouragement. It's never too late to start. And if you have 5 good days and 1 bad afternoon, don't let the 1 bad afternoon define your next 5 days. Okay, be defined by those 5 good days. Have mercy for the afternoon where you made a mistake. It's not a step back. Keep moving forward. God is good.
I like that.
I like that. So, Todd, it's been a great hour on Real Recovery. Thanks for coming on and giving us all this wonderful advice for dad's skills. And if you missed part of it, you can get the entire podcast on myfaithradio.com. Go to the Real Recovery page, and you can download it probably even as early as tonight. So thanks for being on the show once again. And
thanks
for all the listeners. Thanks, Steve, for calling in tonight. I'm encouraged by your story. And thanks, Elena, for sharing about your dad. And, George, as always, it's nice to be on the air with you.
You bet, Billy.
Appreciate it. And let's just say to everyone, Happy Father's Day, and I hope you have a great week. Good night, everyone, and God bless.